so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we are back for another episode of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
I'm solid. I've been up for a long time. I got up early this morning, so it already feels like a long day, even though it's only like 1:30 in the afternoon my time.
I did horrible, horrible things to my body last night.
Oh, yeah?
I went to one of these great, like, there's a lot of these, like, in Atlanta, these kind of, like, nouveau southern places.
Uh-huh.
You know, where, like, you know, you go to a typical restaurant in, like, the Bay Area, right? It's you know, it's Californian cuisine with, like, a chef's take on it. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
In Atlanta, there are places like that where there's a million places where you get, like, fancy shrimp and grits.
Uh-huh.
And now there are a few of those that are popping up around here in Minneapolis. And I went to one, actually, in St. Paul last night, and it was delightful.
Cosmopolitan St. Paul.
But they kept bringing us trays of bourbon. There was a
trays of bourbon.
Yeah, bourbon shots. There was we had a lot of bourbon shots and some
cocktails. Wow, that'll get you.
And some beers, and then I went to a rock show and had some more of those. And
what rock show was it?
Biffy Clyro, which was
delightful. The what? Who now?
Biffy Clyro, the Scottish band Biffy Clyro.
It sounds like you're just like making weird noises together.
It sounds goofy, but they're Scottish. That's, you know, they say they name things in goofy ways, but they're quite good. They've got 5 albums under their belt, and they're the kind of rock band. Yeah, they're the kind of band that like headlines festivals in Europe and plays to 400 people in America. You know,
weird.
You see this some of those bands sometimes where they're just virtually unknown here, but quite popular elsewhere in the world.
Cool.
And so you get, the cool thing is when you see a band like that here,
there's some super fans around, I bet.
There are some super fans, and you're getting the, you know,
the rock
stadium pro rock
stadium
show in a club of 400 people, yeah, which is
it's like the dream you have of your favorite bands that are playing, you know, it's the Radiohead dream, right?
Right, where it's like, oh, could I see Radiohead in a club, you know?
It would be so incredible.
Yeah, I've seen them in a club like 5 times.
I want to kill you.
But in fairness, some of that was like, you know, Ben's tour when they were, that's what they were, just what they were doing.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I've seen, I've been lucky.
Lucky guy. Lucky Derek.
So yeah, so I followed all that up today with a burrito, which has put me in a desperate food coma. So if I just check out at some point in the podcast, it's not you, I'm not bored, it's just the burrito.
I feel like this is the first time you've mentioned a food coma on the air, but I also feel like about 50% of the podcasts you warned me ahead of time that you might be in a food coma.
Yeah, well,
so
you
I
know,
feel like you're eating well.
Ordinarily, we tape in the morning, but you know when we tape in the afternoon, it's definitely like food coma zone for me.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I'll carry my weight.
All right. Yeah, you may need to carry mine too. All right. So we got plenty to talk about. I guess we should start with the homework. Should we start with the homework that I didn't do? I didn't listen to Kweku Collins.
It's unbelievable. This
it's like we're going on like week
graduate.
3 or 4 of this.
It's my fellow Evanston Township High School graduate, and you're disrespecting that bond that he and I have.
I am.
By refusing to listen to his music.
I care little for that bond. I'm not going to lie.
Also, you're missing out. I mean, it really is good. I would recommend. 5 stars. So check it out. Hopefully next week. Fingers crossed.
I have no animus towards Kweku. I just keep not getting around to it.
Mm-hmm.
And well, in fairness, there was a lot. There was a lot of stuff. I did do. I think the rest of the homework, which was watching Amazon pilots.
Mm-hmm.
I did do some of that, and Jane the Virgin. Got some.
Well, where do you
want
to start?
Let's start with the Amazon pilots.
Okay.
When last we spoke of this, right? I had watched 3, and
which were
the Mrs. Maisel,
right? Which I think we both thought was the one most certain to be made,
and then Budding Prospects,
Yes.
And Oasis. And I think those were the three in that order, at least for me, in terms of...
In preference.
Right, in terms of, yeah.
And I think we both were pretty... I think we agreed that we would continue to watch, at least for some time, those first two, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Budding Prospects.
And you liked Oasis more than I did.
I probably would have given Oasis a few more episodes.
Yeah. So this week I watched the other two, which were Master Legend.
Mm-hmm.
And
The Legend of Master Legend.
The Legend of Master Legend? Which yes.
Is a funny name.
And then what was the other one? It's called like VI.
The new VIPs.
The new VIPs, yes. So my top three is unchanged now that I've seen those two. I'd still like the first three that we watched.
Are you a cartoon guy? Like, do you love BoJack Horseman? Or you watch Archer or stuff like that?
Yeah, I am a cartoon guy. And in fact, when I was watching this, I was like, oh, God, because I know you don't really like them. And I was like, I'm hoping that you weren't looking to this as an example of the form. You know what I mean?
Like, No. I mean, I didn't think it was terrible.
It's not terrible. It's one of those shows that where they take there's a lot of jokes. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of swings at the bats.
Yeah.
And I just felt like from an execution level, the
low shooting percentage.
Yeah, it was a very, yes. It was a North Carolina in the Final Four type shooting performance.
That's not good. But congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Honestly, I needed one.
You needed a win. Yeah, it was time.
It's been a long few months. ADW is nice, but the premise is interesting enough. There are talented mm-hmm. people involved. Like Jason Manzoukas shows up to do Jason Manzoukas things, and I'm excited about that. And
he's great. Yep.
Good voices, but like I just felt like not enough of the jokes hit. You know.
Okay.
I think
I actually pretty much agree with that sentiment. But I do think to a degree, when you're watching a pilot, some of the other things you mentioned matter a little more than the like hit rate on jokes in the pilot episode.
Maybe. Didn't you think, like, there was just, I don't know, there was also some just, I felt like, kind of crassness for crassness' sake. A lot of wieners.
But I feel like that's where I'm not sure how to react, because that, to me, is a hallmark of what people view as some of the best cartoons.
I really feel like at some point, you should watch at least an episode of BoJack Horseman.
Okay.
Because I feel like... This is very much trying to just be the Amazon version of that, for you know what I mean? Not that it's the same show, but it's a very similar tone, I would say. Right. And BoJack just nails it so much better.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. And to me, like, I mean, the idea of, like, you know, trying to screw over the soulless corporation you work for, like, that's fertile ground. I think to make an interesting show, and this just doesn't, I don't know, it didn't really do it for me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't totally disagree, but in as much as I was judging a thing I probably would never have considered watching under normal circumstances, I felt like talented people, funny premise, you know, as you said, fertile ground, even though it has been mined pretty well in the past, and then... I figure, you know, it's got a good shot of being funny as it goes on, if it did go on.
Yeah, I expected to like it a lot more than I did.
Interesting.
I'm curious about what you thought of Master Legend. Was it the Legend of Master Legend?
The Legend of Master Legend. That was, in a way, the most interesting one for me from a reaction standpoint. It may have been my least favorite. Although it certainly wasn't bad, but I don't really know what it is. And I think in some circumstances that wouldn't bother me a lot, but for whatever reason in watching this pilot as like, would I watch more? It's like, I didn't get a sense of the show. I mean, it was funny in parts. It was sort of heartbreaking in parts. It was just downright sad in other parts. But it was hard for me to tell if they're making fun of the character or not, or sometimes, and just like I didn't quite know where to put it. And I think so in some respects it was my least favorite watch. In other respects, I feel like, you know, if it found its sort of niche over a couple of episodes, it is the sort of show that could go on to be the most critically acclaimed of the bunch. Because there's an acting performance that I thought was really good by John Hawkes. And it just it has the potential to have a lot of heart to it.
Yeah. Now, I'm a big John Hawkes fan. And yeah. So that's when you told me that he was in it, I was like, all right, well, I'm watching this. And I do think he gives a good performance. But you're right. It's like there's something about it that didn't quite they didn't quite come together. I felt like maybe this needed to be an hour pilot.
Uh-huh.
As opposed
Agreed.
To a half-hour pilot. And,
right.
I walked away feeling like, all right, I could see watching another couple of these to see if it picks up, because maybe it will. But
it would be like a hopeful watch, right?
Yeah.
It would be like a I'm watching to see if something more interesting develops, because right now this is not a show I would stick with.
Yeah, agreed. That's kind of where I'm at. Although now that I am rolling through IMDb, I am very excited to see that that was indeed Don Lewis who shows up in the show there from a different world. Remember?
Oh,
different world?
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm glad she's still around getting work. So yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested if they do make more of those. You know what I mean? Then I might check out one or two.
And that's one I might almost even wait for a critic response.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that is the sort of show where if it's good, critics will tell you. You know what I mean? Like Budding Prospects is something I could see being critically panned and still enjoying.
Yeah.
What I mean? But I feel like the sort of show that Legend of Master Legend has the potential to be is one that if it really hits its mark, everyone's going to talk about what an achievement it is.
Yeah, because the concept is interesting for sure.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different things you could, investigate via that concept.
Yeah. It's about a guy basically who dresses up as like a, superheroes you see on Hollywood, Hollywood Boulevard or, in this case, downtown Las Vegas. Only he really believes he's fighting crime. So
right. The real guy is in Orlando. I actually went and read some of the Rolling Stone article that this pilot is based on.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd be interested in checking that out.
You can Google it and find it very easily.
It's worth it.
Brian Hyatt, is that the guy's name who's a big Rolling Stone writer?
That is a guy who's a friend of my other pod, Brian Hyatt.
Indeed, I believe it was him who wrote The Legend of Master Legend, the Rolling Stone article, and it's about a real guy who really calls himself Master Legend and patrols the streets of Orlando.
So is he getting paid for this?
I didn't look that far into it. The article was in 2008.
Okay.
So I assume
sounds like he could use it.
Yeah, I think it certainly does sound like he can use it. Although I don't know that the rest of I don't know that the family aspect of this story is actually from the true life, but the character that he dresses up as and what he does as a real life superhero, this is a thing that's real that happened, or at least it was happening in 2008 all over the country. Gangs essentially of
fake superheroes,
quote, real life superheroes dressing up in costumes, giving themselves superhero nicknames and allegedly fighting crime.
Wasn't there a movie about that too, with like what's that cute girl?
that narrows it down.
Like, this is really gonna drive me crazy. Chloe Grace Moretz.
You mean Kick-Ass?
Yes, that's the movie. Kick-Ass. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. That was the movie. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Although that basically, yeah, exactly.
I've watched too many things in life.
There were two of them actually.
Anymore. Yeah. All right, so let's move. Should we jump on to the next
thing? The other thing you watched?
The other thing we watched, yeah. Jane the Virgin.
Yeah, now I'm watching this show. I've been watching it for about a year. I'm caught up. I am current.
You're 100% caught up on it. How many episodes has that been?
I don't know. It's third season right now, I believe. So I think it's like 50 or 60.
Yeah, so
I think it's like 20 episodes a season, yeah. And we're nearing the end of season 3.
So that's one. This is one of those things, and you know, watching the show, and it struck me, like, I started thinking about how many of these are there, you know, because it felt like it feels like one of those peak TV things where it's like, man, there's a lot of good shows.
Yeah,
I rather enjoyed this show.
It's really good.
But I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, do I have room to fit another show that's cranking out 20 episodes a year into my life? Is it worth getting caught up on this? I don't know. But I will say that, is it Gina Rodriguez who plays,
I believe that's her
who
name,
plays
yeah.
Jane?
Yep.
She is a delight.
She's an absolute delight. She's totally wonderful as an actress. As a personality, like she glows off the screen, and they found a really effective way to take advantage of that in a way that ordinarily would be so far over the top, but because of the sort of mock telenovela thing that they do, it's fun, you know, it's all in good fun.
Yeah, it seems like a fun show. It seems like it has a bit of a brain. But it's also mm-hmm. it's also in, you know, pretty easy.
Pulpy.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's not gonna stretch.
Yeah,
you out
no,
too
it's
much.
Not overly complicated, but it is thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know?
And like a telenovela, it's great escapism, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's some of the best escapism because unlike a telenovela, it's very self-aware. And I just think it's executed so well. And I was thinking again, watching the newest episode this week, just how good of a show this is. And you know, not everything has to be The Wire, for God's sakes. It's not that, but it's just for what it sets out to do. I just think it's basically, you know, it's batting 1,000 almost for quality in terms of the sort of show that it is.
Did you watch the revival of One Day at a Time?
No,
on Netflix.
But I heard really good things about it.
I have to, and I haven't watched it yet. But it's like one of the things you hear about that is like, oh, they're, you know, they're telling stories that, you know, about people that you don't hear told on television that often. And I kind of feel like, well, I mean, obviously not the same exact story. And I think because they're going for a little grittier realism on that show, from what I understand.
Sure.
But like,
yeah,
that's the way I felt about this. Is like, you know, this is a portrait of a family. You know, that I haven't gotten a lot of on television that I was interested in seeing their world.
Yeah. And it goes deeper into the backgrounds of the family. And I just think it's really, like you said, it finds a way to do all of the pulpy fun things that make it easy to enjoy while also delivering thoughtful art. You know, and I think that is something that this is sort of in the best possible way what peak TV has wrought upon the networks. Is networks now feel pressure to make a more thoughtful version of a show they might have made, or maybe even a show they totally would never have made.
Yeah. I mean, I got to think this is better than 90% of network television.
I think it is, but it is still network television.
Yeah, for sure. I still though feel like this is it's definitely a show that I would watch. I don't know if it'll turn out to be a show that I will watch.
Right, but you know what? You know the sort of place this type of show usually occupies for me is like now that I know, like, and this is how I feel about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I watched a couple of episodes of, and I'm not gonna like break my neck to get through right now. But the way I think about it is someday, in, you know, the middle of a fallow period of television, I'll like catch a cold or something and spend a day in bed and maybe watch, have myself a little Jane the Virgin a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend marathon, you know?
You
may make it through that show eventually because it's enjoyable and you'll find a time probably.
Because it's like, you know, you look up and like, oh, Better Call Saul starting and oh, you know, like.
It is hard to find that time. No
Fargo's
question.
Coming back like this week, right? Fargo's coming back this week. Tonight?
Oh,
maybe?
Yeah, which actually brings me to something I wanted to assign you as homework, which is, you know, probably falls closer to the Jane the Virgin category for you, but is an absolute must watch every week for me. Have you seen or do you know about iZombie?
No, I do not.
Okay. Were you a Veronica Mars fan at all?
Yes, I was.
Well, Rob Thomas has a show on TV right now called iZombie. Rob Thomas, the creator and showrunner of Veronica Mars.
As opposed to the Matchbox 20 singer.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally different guys. Although, hilariously, that Rob Thomas does factor into iZombie, actually. Yeah.
And by the way, shame on you for discussing Rob Thomas, the television creator, and not mentioning Party Down.
Great point. Party Down, which I think you can still watch on Netflix. Is that the case?
I
don't know.
It's around somewhere.
If you've never seen
Party Down, that supersedes any other homework assignment we're giving you this week, because Party Down's amazing.
That's very true. It's an excellent, excellent, funny show with some incredible talent in it.
Yeah. A lot of people have since gone on to do many greater things, which is one of the joys of it. So you'll get a kick out of it. Everyone is in it, I think.
Totally. In any event, his current show is called iZombie, and the premise is that basically a young, about-to-be doctor who's got a fiance and her whole life planned out goes to some party with a med school friend, and there's like a weird zombie outbreak, and she gets scratched and becomes a zombie. And in this world, basically, the deal with zombies is they have to eat brains or they like devolve into, you know, George Romero zombies. Mm-hmm. But if they get their, decent helping of brains, they can basically be a normal human, just a little pale. And they are super strong and have those sorts of zombie qualities. But also, whatever brain they eat, they sort of take on a little bit of the personality of the person whose brain it was. And they also potentially have visions of things that happened in that person's life.
All right.
And so this young, you know, med school grad sort of does, you know, in processing being a zombie, because it is contagious, breaks up with her fiance, chooses to work at the morgue instead of whatever promising medical field she was about to go into, because it gives her access to brains and sort of keeps her away from people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but then begins eating the brains essentially of murder victims and then having visions that help her be sort of a assistant detective.
Okay.
Now, I know that was an incredibly complicated premise, but the short version, which I could have probably just given to you in the first place, is it's basically zombie Veronica Mars.
Zombie.
And the lead is delightful. I should look up her name instead of just calling her the lead.
You can just call her not Kristen Bell. It's fine.
She's not Kristen Bell, but it's not like a Kristen Bell impression or anything. She's just really good in her own right, and she does a really good job of playing the character's sort of inner struggle, but also delivering the quippy lines and taking on the sort of absurd personalities each week of whoever's brain she just ate. All right.
Well, I will definitely check it out. There's a lot going on this week, man.
No, I know. It's on Netflix. It doesn't have to be homework for this week, okay. But coming up, you know, I think season 3 just started. That's the only reason I'm thinking of it is the most recent season premiered yesterday. So sometime in the next month or two, when things have calmed slightly, I'm going to make you watch a little bit of iZombie on Netflix. And to those of you who know nothing of it and might be looking for a fun show, can't recommend it strongly enough.
You know what? I got a couple plane flights this week, so maybe I'll do the download thing and see if I can.
Yeah, there you go. Just download one or two on Netflix. You'll get the gist of it. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
All right. So before we move on to some more zombie talk, I got to check in on you and your homework assignment.
Did you
watch Mistaken for Strangers?
Yes. And the first thing I want to say to you is that it certainly did not change my opinion of the Nationals' music.
Okay.
That
was going to be my first question.
Do you find them to be
depressing still? I guess is maybe the
thing. Did I say depressing?
With. Yeah, like people find them to be a bummer, I think.
I did think about that as I watched it. And one of the conclusions I came to is I think a huge part of that is his voice.
Yes, and that, I did say that, because he has that baritone, but I think a lot of times
he's singing or doing things that are not,
sometimes they're funny, but it's, you know, his tone is like, You know, it's Thom Yorke gets tagged with that a lot too.
Yes. But it's true in both cases. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to minimize that. I love Thom Yorke. I think it works better in Radiohead because I think there's more interesting music around him.
I just think Radiohead music is a lot less depressing than it's described as. Not that they don't have some sad songs. But a lot of times they have happy songs or sexy songs, and people are like, "Oh, look at that sad Radiohead." You know what I mean?
But that is, I'm not saying those people are right. I'm saying they're responding to a real thing.
Yeah,
Thom Yorke's voice does have sort of a forlorn emotion in it a lot, even when he's singing about things that don't reflect that.
I like music like that. I like music that is where like.
I don't dislike music.
They'll have
like
happy
that.
Melodies and like really dark, angry lyrics, or vice versa. You know what I mean? Like I enjoy that contrast personally.
I'm not. My problem is not with that contrast, and it's not a strong problem. I just don't think the National's music is super interesting. I think a lot of it is, you know, it's almost like vaguely. Not jammy, but they're doing like a soundscape thing that like
a lot of the time
sort of devolves into a jammy sort of a situation, but it's more just like not of many notes being played as much as just like escalating essentially just crescendos and I don't want to say cacophony because it's not like bad noisy, it sounds pretty.
Yeah, what the National do, and they do the Desner twins, who are kind of
the chief
musician guys in the band. They're both big Grateful Dead fans, and they spearheaded a Dead tribute that was pretty big last year. Mm-hmm. But
they build like layers
but
of
they,
a soundscape.
Yeah, they are not a jam band. Like they're not. It's not like a ton of improvisational stuff. In fact, it's sort of almost the opposite.
It's not improvisational, but it is build like
these
building.
Like, right, yeah, they build these intricate patterns and gradually add to them over the course of a song, and so they kind of builds. Usually at the end, there's sort of you have almost like a little not symphonies, maybe the wrong word, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening.
It's hard to describe exactly what it is, but that's exactly what I was trying to describe as well. And look. That's a specific it's a Sigur Rós does that sort of thing too. There's a lot of bands that do that sort of thing, and a lot of them are very popular. It's just not totally my thing. And in the specific case of the National, I think I enjoy that style more when it has almost a ethereal nonsensical vocal style like a Sigur Rós, which I also don't love, but just like that sort of building, crescendoing soundscape thing to me, A, is not really my thing, and B is like when it is capped by a sort of, I don't want to say droning, because again, I don't want to be rude. I recognize the quality of what's happening, you know? It's just, I don't love it. And I do feel like he's a downer, even if he's not singing about downer things often. When he's like leaning out into the crowd and repeating a phrase that I don't know the words to, but like that sounds like someone's physically reaching into his chest and tearing his heart from his body.
The two bands you mentioned are probably two of my 10 favorite bands in the world. So.
Right. It's pretty well documented. We have slightly different tastes.
Yeah, so it may be a little bit more of my jam. I don't know. I still would like to make you a little best of. I'll give you a short best of playlist.
Absolutely,
in the
make
National.
Me a best of. I'm not opposed to the National. Yeah. I have no problem with the National. Really, it's just not. And I think I get it at a pretty deep level what people are responding to about it. Like, that is cool. The layering soundscape thing. And that's why I brought Sigur Rós up. I mean, I know you love them. But those two bands really have a similar style. The sound doesn't end up being that similar. But what they're doing mechanically is very similar, I think, from a musical standpoint. Explosions in the Sky is a little bit like that.
Yeah, love that band, too.
Well, what's interesting is of those three, I like them by far the best. And I think part of that is they don't bother with stupid singing.
With vocals at all. Yeah, but I don't know, Matt, I really like a lot of his lyrics, and I love his vocal style. So I don't know. I'd be curious, maybe, you know, I'd be curious to
see. I would like to talk about the movie, though. Are we still going to talk about the movie?
Let's get to that. I'll just make this one point. Have you heard the Elvi record that came out last year, which was...
I listened to it at the time because
it was... from Phenomena.
Right.
It doesn't have that same stuff going on musically. You know, it's a... And the tone's a little different, so I'd just be curious.
I did listen to it at the time, and for whatever it's worth, I have no specific memory of what it sounded like, but I didn't choose to, like... invest any further time or interest in it.
All right, so let's talk about the movie a little bit, because part of my contention was whether or not you decide that you would like the music of The National, that you would enjoy the movie, because it's just a good, it's just an interesting documentary. Sort of documentary, I should say, because
I don't know.
There's definitely some question
That's
about how, like,
about
how
it.
Real it is, you know, but it's
have
a really interesting
tale. Have they
talked
about that?
I don't think they have. If you go on the internet, there's definitely been some discussion of it.
Do you have a sense of the consensus?
I would say fairly split is what I would say.
So basically for those, I mean, okay. First of all, the fact that it cleared and was put out at all means to me that, like, on some level everyone's in on what was happening.
Sure, yeah.
For those who have not seen it, the shortest way I can describe it is Matt Berninger, the lead singer of The National's sort of hapless younger brother.
He's a little bit of a screw up, yeah.
He's practically the guy in Confederacy of Dunces. Like, obviously he's not that much of a caricature,
right?
But like, that's sort of who he seems to be, at least to the degree that that's the character he is in the film.
He's kind of like a, like almost a wacky sitcom neighbor of a brother kind of character. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And he goes on tour allegedly to, like, help out, work as a roadie, see the world, and sort of also is filming this documentary because
he
allegedly
likes movies. He makes like, you know, cheesy horror movies is like what
he makes into. Really terrible horror movies. Yeah. He's not like a real filmmaker. He's made two absurd low budget horror films, which are in the, do look like, to, you know, you see a bit of them.
They kind of look
do
fun.
Look funny.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
but
Watch
it's
the
unclear
room.
If that's what he's going for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's unclear, frankly, how now if this thing is a hunt. Well, to sort of finish the story, he's essentially, while allegedly being a roadie and not doing his job well at all, making what amounts to an unauthorized documentary about, again, ostensibly the band, but it's really about him.
Right.
He shoots himself an incredible amount. He acts ridiculous and records it.
There's a lot about his inferiority complex, too, of, you know, having a rock star brother. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, all of the actual, like, interview pieces within the documentary are him working out his own issues with his rock star older brother. Rarely with his brother, mostly with other members of his brother's band and the crew. And so it really does have its laughs, but I felt a little weird laughing a lot of times, because quite honestly, if the thing is totally sincere and real, like, that's a young man with a lot of problems who probably needs serious help.
Yeah. And in that sense, yeah, I mean, look, I think, yes, all parties are invested. As I think I told you, like, I saw this movie with the band, and the brother was there.
Really?
Yeah. Like, not it wasn't, like, just us. It was a very large audience of people. But, yeah, like, the band was there. They played a set after. The brother was there, you know, they introduced the movie, they talked about it, and, like, you know, so everything is amicable.
What did they say about the movie?
You know, this is a few years ago now, so I'm trying to, remember, but I think they just talked a lot about the experience of making it and what it was like. Mostly what I remember is they were all very drunk during the set that they played afterwards, and that the movie was just I didn't expect it to be funny. I did not expect a movie about The National to be funny, and I found it to be very funny. often. And like,
it was funny. And they were like, there's no question.
Well, I don't know if they're real or not. You know what I mean? But there's just a lot of interpersonal family stuff that feels real, you know? And so that made it a very interesting experience to me.
Yeah, I mean, he basically at one point interviews both his parents about his inferiority complex with regards to his brother. Like, which really, you know, ultimately, if this was a documentary about the National, that has no place in the movie.
Yeah, so a lot of it had no place in the movie, but then
I know it's almost a gonzo documentary about this guy making a documentary about his brother, which is a confusing thing to say, but I don't know. I guess my if I'm trying to sum up how I feel, I don't quite know, but it certainly, I think, would be if you're someone who's interested in film and someone who would enjoy the comedy of like not quite knowing how sincere something is and having to pick it apart yourself, it's definitely worth watching.
Agreed. I was accidentally playing the trailer there for half a second. It's definitely worth watching. It's not long. It's 75 minutes.
It couldn't be much longer than it is.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, you know, music docs are not always interesting.
Right.
And this
but it's not,
is.
I mean, here, what's interesting about this is I think on one hand, if you were a big fan of the National who had an investment in these guys as people, it might be on one hand super interesting. On the other hand, if you're a big fan of the National who wants to like watch a movie about the National with footage of them performing and stuff, this is probably not your best avenue.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, I mean, it's definitely not Stop Making Sense. You know, right. Like that's not what this is. But that's okay.
Yeah, nor is it even like the Beatles anthology show where you're learning things about the band, like at all.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like a more entertainment experience, I think.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and honestly, like, there are also parts where like Matt Berninger, if it's not sort of fake and a send up, like he. I don't know. I can't believe that. Honestly, my if I had to bet, I'd say everyone's in on the joke just because it's hard for me to imagine them agreeing to it being released if they weren't.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, especially with family involved and all that. And yeah. I've talked to Matt a little bit, and he's a sharp guy.
Is he a funny guy?
Yes,
that's what's interesting to me.
He's kind of a funny guy.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, he's considered, and he's not. You know, I don't know. I definitely had, you know, much like the movie, I had the image of him as this completely serious indie rock guy, and it's not.
And he's not.
That's not him. Yeah. Not, well, he's I think not an you know one.
The one insight you get about him in the movie is, that he was like the high school quarterback. You know, prom king type of kid.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rare for, I think, the kind of indie rock that he's producing. And so I think that probably is part of why, you know, why he may not be as self-serious as he appears.
Indeed. All right. So we should probably jump over to The Walking Dead, which wrapped up.
Yeah.
Season number a million. Are they on season a million yet?
I think it's eight.
Eight. All right. We haven't talked much about Walking Dead. I think maybe we mentioned it once or twice this season, so I thought it'd be good to do a little check-in now that we're done.
But I also think it's noteworthy that neither of us were, like, breaking our backs to be caught up during last season. And I think we both kind of got sucked back in a little bit this season, no?
I think a little bit is fair to say. Like,
I mean, you're watching it anyway.
The way I feel is like, yeah, the Negan thing has injected some energy into the show.
Huh? I am about done with Negan, though. I don't know how you feel.
Also what I was about to say. And like much like many other things in the show, they've taken that energy and then squandered it by letting it just sort of go on and stagnate for too many episodes.
Yeah, so the thing that frustrated me about it, and hopefully, you know, we're getting a change, because the last episode I thought was very good. I wouldn't have bothered me if Negan had died, but I'm pretty sick of him just being a step ahead on everything. It's like, really? Again? Like, do we just have to watch this guy whoop their ass again and again and again? It's just not that.
And it's like the reason that he's still alive in this post-apocalyptic hellscape because he's just kind of good at running away from a battle?
Or, like, or is it just that he's so good at getting people to do his fighting for him?
Hey, watch me hide behind this truck.
Like, the only fighting he does is one-on-one with a bat against an unarmed kneeling person.
Right. It's like every single person, you know, on the side of our original heroes, who we've now spent 8 years watching, you know, these guys are badass killing machines for the most part. Your Ricks and your Daryls and your whatever, you know, the finely honed.
Your Carols,
right. Every single one of these people, the, you know, the military trained Rosita, you know what I mean? Like, they all want him specifically dead, and yet no one even gets a shot at him. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, I'm starting to forget how long we're supposedly in the apocalypse for at this point. How long has it been? Because the infrastructure he has set up seems like a decade. You know? And I just don't totally understand, like, how does he have this wealth of this amount of loyal people that, like, he's burning faces and no one's turning on
him. And, like, that's like half, you know, and there is talk in the thing of people who want to turn on him, and you would think that in the middle of a battle like that would be sort of a pretty perfect opportunity for that to happen, you know,
right?
And nothing. I just, this show, and I don't know if it's because of budget or whatever, but, like, this show needs a Battle of the Bastards, you know what I mean? Where, like, they just, you just go to war and settle some things and advance the plot. And
yes.
And I don't, and I kind of, I don't know why I had sort of talked myself into the finale of this being that. And there were, so certainly it was a crescendo of action for this season, but it just doesn't go nearly far enough.
No, the problem for me was not the episode itself, but it's the forward-looking implications of it. Because if Negan dies in that battle, for instance. And my God, if we spoiled a lot of things.
Sorry.
Although, maybe not, I guess, because really the spoilers are what I'm about to say. If he dies in that battle, then now we're like in a new world. Now it's like, all right, well, who's left in the Saviors? Who's in charge? Can a peace be reached? How do things change? What does this mean for the various different communities? Instead, they, like, reset us right back to status quo by having Negan go home and, like, he's got an army. Still, after one of his armies was basically exterminated, there's a whole other army waiting back at the compound.
Yeah,
and it's like, it's like, so it's the same? So they're still, like, because right now the quantity of people they have is no match for the army that Negan is about to come back with.
Right.
So I just, like, why are we stuck in this place of this guy? Is he just going to be the new ruler of the world? Is that, like, the new paradigm?
And I just feel like whenever the show comes back, it's not going to be like Negan goes to war against these guys.
Right.
It's going to be Negan comes back and tries to torture them and bring them back to his side again. And we're basically going to be at square one, minus a few people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I kind of agree.
It,
you know, and that's what I just get from this show. It's just more spinning of the wheels.
It didn't do that the first few seasons.
Well, by the time they got to the farm, you know, Old Horse's Farm was some world-class wheel spinning. And that was probably, what, season two, season three?
I think that was season three. And that slowed you down, but it was less than a whole season at the farm, wasn't it?
No,
and then they really and then they the farm. You know, they have to leave the farm. And they have to, like, they've had to leave a lot of places.
And then they went to Alexandria, right? Or, you know, and then there was the, I don't know. The show tests my patience.
I kind of agree with that, although I did enjoy watching the last episode. It was a good watch.
Yeah, I agree. And there are moments. The show has moments. That's why I'm still here.
Yeah.
But I just, like I said, I really feel like they could take some storytelling lessons from a Game of Thrones in terms of building and completing stories and yet still having more to tell. I mean, there's endless possibilities within this world. Just curious, are you in or out on CGI Tiger?
I'm in.
You're in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, when the tiger finally attacked, that was a good moment for me. No question.
I agree.
And it came out of nowhere, too. It was excellent.
I agree. I'm generally out on CGI tiger.
Why?
As much as I love that moment, uh-huh. I mean, it's so... you know what I mean? It's so ham-handedly CGI. And...
I don't know. Is it that ham-handed? Or is it just like... Is that just your brain working?
I don't know. Like it's very obvious to me that is there's no tiger in that room. You know what I mean?
Well, right. But that's what I'm saying is like I don't think that's the CGI's fault. Frankly, like I think it's a combination of A, you know they don't have all those big actors in a room with a tiger, and B, like the fact that there is a tiger in this poke, like within the story, the existence of the tiger is absurd.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing, and that was the other thing I was going to say is like, in a world in which I will accept that flesh eating zombies will exist, the tiger's the most insane thing. Yeah, like
that. The most unrealistic thing on Walking Dead is that tiger, unquestionably.
Just, yeah, he's just sitting around on a chain on some
yeah, he's just chilling.
Arm.
Like, a totally cool tiger. Who apparently attacks the bad guys.
I'll throw a little zoo knowledge at you, because I have some zookeepers in my family, or a zookeeper in my family.
Interesting.
The tiger is the craziest animal at the zoo.
Sure.
And the zoo protocol is if a tiger escapes...
Kill it dead.
And they can enclose the tiger in an area in which there is a keeper, it is your responsibility to take one for the team because locking up the tiger is more important than you surviving.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they'll try to save you or whatever, but you got to close the tiger down because the tiger...
Because the death toll will climb.
Tigers just go nuts. Like, the thing that happened at Siegfried and Roy, right. Like the tiger that knew those people his whole life and just decided to snap and eat Siegfried one day... That's a tiger being a tiger. That's what tigers do.
Yep, he's tigering.
Yeah, like that tiger at the SF Zoo. Ran 100 yards past dozens of people to pick out a singular person that it wanted to eat.
Yep.
Like that's like tigers. Yeah, you cannot just have a tiger lying around on a chain. It's insane.
No, that's not
okay,
real.
Sorry. That's all I have to say about the tiger.
Yep. No, pet tiger, not a thing.
That's not a thing. No. Yeah, under any circumstance. But I don't know. So Walking Dead, were you going to watch next year? I probably will. But my expectation, like the bar is so low for me in terms of what I expect out of this show now.
Interesting. I don't think I have quite as extreme a view.
It's like my sixth or seventh choice on a Sunday night at this point.
Well, there's a lot of good TV on Sunday, but I would say it's probably still rounding out the top five for me.
All right. Top five things on Sunday night, you'd say?
I think it's like squeaking into the top five things I might watch on Sunday night, yeah.
All right.
That's not like a great compliment.
It's not a re-endorsement. Yeah, I get to five pretty easy. I mean, HBO is like three right there, and you're watching Big Little Lies, so that's four for you, I would think, right?
No, that's only three. What's the fourth HBO?
John Oliver? You're watching John
nope.
Oliver?
No, I'm not.
Oh, wow.
I don't do news, man.
All right. Well, you know, that is a comedy program.
Yeah, but it's a comedy program that forces you to confront the reality of the news.
That it does. So, yeah, I mean, John Oliver, Girls Crashing for me. You can take those right off the top, and then I'd rather watch Billions or Feud or...
Yeah. I do watch Feud. You know, it's like I said, it's probably right there after the four you just mentioned that I watch. Yeah. Feud, Girls, Crashing, Big Little Lies. And then Walking Dead will squeeze in.
Yeah, my DVR is a tough time taping it all.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of work. A lot of work for the old DVR.
All right, Do you want to jump into sports, or should we cut it off here and do some homework? Baseball's back, man. Are you excited?
In a word, eh. Baseball is my third or fourth favorite sport. Which is to say, I love the game still. But I would find it increasingly hard to watch on television, and the fact that my favorite team is a pile of garbage does not help in
It's definitely harder to beat a baseball when your team is a pile of garbage.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, and this is probably a longer conversation for a different day, but the economics of baseball are such that a lot of people's teams are likely to be garbage more often than not.
I mean, I guess, but I mean, I feel like we've seen, you know, the Pirates and the Royals and a lot of these teams that are like, you know, you consider perma-garbage, like really pop up and be something in the last few years.
Yeah, and I think that those are teams that have had really good runs of management and picks and all that stuff, and it's a credit to them. But I think it's incredibly difficult for those markets to sustain that over time versus teams that are allowed to spend a boatload more money.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's always easier when you have money, for sure. But I don't know. I mean, you know, I'll bring up my team, I'm a Braves fan, and they went from a good playoff team to complete and total garbage, and we'll be back to a playoff contender within 3.5-4 years. I think that's you know, it's very doable. The Astros did something pretty similar, you know?
Yeah, that's somewhat true of the Astros.
It's really – the Cubs kind of too, you know?
Well, but the Cubs are
– The Cubs have the money. But
the Cubs
that's not how they built that team, though. They didn't build that team with money. They built that team with smart drafting.
Well, they built that team by resetting the clock and then by smart drafting and then by money.
Yeah, I mean, they added some pieces at the end, but like a lot of the expensive pieces are Jason Hayward. You know what I mean?
But the Cubs have a chance to sustain the quality because they're going to be allowed to spend money to keep the great talent they've developed.
Yeah.
The Royals, on the other hand, have almost no chance of sustaining greatness because they can't.
Let me ask you something else then.
And the White Sox are really more in the have-nots, as it were.
You got some real prospects on that team, though, man.
As a guy who's carried around
Yon Makanda all year on my fantasy bench, just waiting for something to happen.
But the bigger point is why do they have to trade Chris Sale, who's young on a good contract and one of the best pitchers in baseball?
Because that's the most valuable asset you can have. Sometimes you trade your really valuable asset.
Well, except that, like, because you can't spend the money to truly build around him.
And that's before you get into the fact that he might be kind of insane.
He is kind of insane, but we've been hearing the trade, and now they're talking about trading Quintana. Why would you trade Quintana?
Are the most valuable things, you know. I mean, look, it was very painful to me when the Braves traded Jason Hayward and when they traded Anderson Simmons and when they, you know, like, that stuff sucks. It's like, why do they have to do that? But in the end, those trades all worked out for Atlanta.
But there's an answer to that question.
You know?
And yes, if those trades all work out, you can be good for a couple years before you have to trade the next bunch.
Yeah.
But that's the point. Is when you are a smaller market or for a team that for whatever reason is not spending ridiculous amounts of money, ultimately you're gonna have to trade that next bunch.
All right,
just how the game is played.
I'm gonna turn this on its head and say, like, I mean, look, obviously I watch a lot of soccer. And you know, European soccer is 100% economics driven. And you know, in the English league, there are 6 to 7 teams that have any chance to win at all, and maybe 7 or 8 teams that have any chance to finish in the top 4 in any year. And the rest are just trying to stay up. Yes, last year was literally a 1 in 5,000 shot of somebody else coming out and winning. And they're right back. They literally went right back.
They're
to
trash again.
Yeah, to be mediocre. So, you know, but that seems to work for that. The NBA seems to work well as a top-heavy league where only a few teams have a chance to win.
I think the difference with the NBA is it could be any team
that's run well.
It just seems like
you have to get a superstar, and either by luck or by crook. You know what I mean?
Well, but yeah, but that's the point. Yeah, sometimes it's luck to get the one superstar, but I mean, look how long the Cleveland Cavaliers with poor management tried to build around LeBron the first time without having any real success. So
I mean, any real success except, you know, making the NBA finals.
Okay. Without winning any titles.
They didn't win any titles. Yeah, but I mean, making the finals, I would say, is pretty successful.
Well, I would argue that given the way LeBron James was playing, they should have won a title with that team.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and argue that they shouldn't have built better around LeBron James.
That's my only point.
Firmly believe that, but it still worked out pretty well for Cleveland in the end.
Yeah, yes, and the luck of getting LeBron is part of that, obviously. If they built well around LeBron, we'd probably be having a totally different conversation. He probably never would have left Cleveland, and he'd have won titles there. And the way the Cavaliers were looked at would be totally different. And that really is an issue of poor management at that time and better management later.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is having only a couple teams with a real chance to sustain greatness and win the league. I mean, the NBA has really always been that way, at least for the last 30 years, right?
It's true that there's only a few teams, yes, but they could be, you know, theoretically, they could be any team. The Spurs have no built-in advantages, except that they got Tim Duncan. And then after that, it's hiring Greg Popovich. It's draft picks like Ginobili and Parker that anybody could have made, you know? I think baseball does not run in the same egalitarian way, and football is much closer to basketball in that respect. Football might be the furthest.
But the draft, like, you know, anybody could have drafted Mike Trout. He was a second-round pick. You know what I mean?
Well, but a lot of the baseball draft is wrapped up in signing bonuses and money as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that, for sure. But it's also prospect evaluations pretty inexact.
You know? Well, of course. That's true in every sport.
So I don't know, but
here's the thing. What percentage chance, and in Mike Trout's specific case that may not be the case because the Angels spend a decent amount of money, but like in the case of a general Mike Trout, what are the odds he someday ends up on the Yankees? They're pretty damn good, whereas there's no reason
anyone would
be more likely to end up on the Knicks at this point in the NBA.
It seems like teams have Mike Trout's locked up long term. You know, I'm looking at this market, you know, that I'm sitting in here right now. It didn't work out for them, but you know, the Twins locked up Joe Mauer, you know.
But he is somewhat rare in that respect, a small market team.
Now, the problem for the Twins is that when Joe Mauer turns out, you know, eventually becomes a league average player, they can't afford to get out from under it. Yeah. But, you know, I feel like position players, you're seeing more of that. Now, Bryce Harper is an exception, but that's because Bryce Harper is repped by Scott Boras, who is not going to let any team not lock him down. So,
well, but any good, that's just being a good agent, though. That's not,
but it's not, you know, like Boras has as a philosophy, it's really important for me to take you to free agency, and clients have to overrule him in the couple of rare exceptions where that didn't happen.
But to suggest that Scott Boras is doing something wrong.
I'm not suggesting he's doing anything wrong. I'm just saying that there are many jobs. Yeah. No, it's no shade at Scott Boras. He's very good at what he does. He gets his guys a lot of money. I'm not cracking on Scott Boras. But what I'm saying is that, you know, the Braves lock up Freddie Freeman for 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing a lot of these young position players are getting big contracts. Less so with pitchers, but that's because pitchers get hurt and teams don't want to make quite the same kind of commitment. Isn't Manny Machado signed long-term in Baltimore? You know, like a lot of these guys, like, I don't know that necessarily you're going to see a ton of player movement from some of those big guys.
Okay. You know? Well, I guess we'll see. But these are young guys, and the history is something different.
Yeah. But that's not to say you're right. The Angels may at some point decide we need to do a total rebuild, and the thing that can get us the most stuff is Mike Trout. That could happen.
I mean, the Angels aren't the best example because Artie Moreno wants to spend. But like, those decisions are faced by smaller market, less spendy organizations every year in baseball. Every year. I think it's the only sport where you're really confronted with that. Now, football is different because you don't have contracts. Really.
I feel like there's enough money coming into baseball now from TV and advanced media and things like that that you'll see less of that.
Well, you should, but the problem is
how about
baseball
Miami?
Pays
perfect example.
All the owners just as much.
Stanton got a huge long-term deal, and that's like maybe the worst market in the league.
Wait, who?
Giancarlo Stanton.
Okay, yeah, but again, that's just because the owner can decide to do that, to spend a ridiculous amount of money on one guy. But like, my point is, like, look at the Oakland A's. Like, they've been spending no money forever. It's clearly a philosophy of ownership, and it's not about the ownership not having money to spend. That's absurd.
Yeah,
they have a ton of money, and they can spend literally as much as they want. The reason they don't spend is because economically there's no incentive for them to spend.
I would say the A's are the most extreme example of that, though.
What about the Tampa Bay Rays? And again, it's not to say they'll never be good. When they have the happy marriage of a bunch of good prospects that happen to develop at the same time, they got a chance to be good for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they're going to have to confront unloading the majority of those guys.
But, you know, Tampa took the guy that they thought was the guy, Evan Longoria, and they spent big on him.
Right, but they're never going to be good with him unless they get another bunch of great prospects that all come along
at once. Any one baseball player doesn't make a team. Mike Trout being a perfect example of that. But, like, the premise that teams can't afford to keep their stars and that's a league-wide epidemic, I'm just saying I don't know that that's true. It's true in Oakland, but I don't know how many other places it's true.
I think semantically it's not true. They all can afford it. I'm saying they choose not to afford it. Hmm. Like Jerry Reinsdorf is not short on cash. The payroll of the White Sox could be the same as the payroll of the Yankees if Jerry Reinsdorf felt like it.
Yeah,
but he doesn't. He wants to make money, not throw good money after bad.
I don't know that that's a thing that's like new in baseball. Like I feel
it's
like
not new.
It's always true. I don't know.
It's always been true. That's why. That's exactly my point.
All right. Well, let's talk about Tony Romo because.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the idea of Tony Romo to the CBS number one broadcast team?
I'm thrilled as a football fan. I'm saddened as a Tony Romo fan.
You just wanted to see Romo leave it out on the field a few more times.
That makes it sound like I wanted him to get killed, but I just thought he had something left.
I do too, but I mean like I don't know.
And I am as someone who believed in the greatness of Tony Romo, I feel like his career was not what I wished it could have been, and I feel like he had a chance to improve that legacy. But, you know, on the other hand, he also had a chance to get his back broken, and he's going to make a bunch of money to sit in a booth and talk about games, which is a much easier job, and be with his family much more and, like, probably live a happier life. So who am I to say?
I think this is a win for everybody, particularly Tony Romo.
I think it's a pretty clear win for Romo in a lot of ways.
I think he got a little bit of a bad rap as QB. And, you know, look, anytime there are more good QBs in the league, that's a good thing. But beyond that, I don't know that he was that special where it's like, oh, man, we just.
I think he had a chance to be that special.
You know, like he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league, but
like
I don't ever think he was one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. I don't at any point. I don't think he's in the top five.
Oh, I disagree.
All right. So I mean, you're not putting him ahead of Brady, obviously.
No, Brady and Peyton are clearly ahead of him, Aaron Rodgers.
I was going to say you're not putting him ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Right. I think he's in the argument with anybody else of the last 15 years.
Are you putting him ahead of Roethlisberger?
I think he's right there with Roethlisberger in terms of ability and would I want him quarterbacking my team. Yeah, he's right there. I think that's where, and this is going to sound hypocritical because I try not to use this, that's where those two guys are close enough and tough enough to compare that Roethlisberger's titles probably put him over the top, even though I don't like using that as a judgment of quarterbacks.
Oh, man.
But those two guys are really very close, I think.
I like Tony Romo, but there's a lot of guys that I would be fine having instead, including Matt Ryan. So,
I don't think Matt Ryan has been as good as Tony Romo was throughout his career. I just don't think he's been as good of a quarterback.
I would.
I mean, you can argue about whether you'd want Romo with fear of getting injured, and I guess you could use some ridiculous, like, you never won in a playoff arguments, which I think are dumb, but, you know, fine. And I'm not dissing Matt Ryan. He's, you know, what, 8 years younger than Tony Romo, so he's, you know, his career may very well prove significantly better. But I'm not sure Matt Ryan before this year has done things that put him on the level of,
well, they'd already if you want to throw the playoff thing out there, they'd already won the same number of playoff games. But I think you'd be surprised the statistical comparisons between the two of those guys that was standing, you know what I mean?
But that's not totally fair. I mean, that's what I mean about judging quarterbacks is like, yeah, Matt Ryan's going to have some better statistics from a quantity standpoint and like, but he's got Julio Jones and had Roddy Wyatt.
Well, hold on now. I mean, like,
Tony Romo for most of his, when he was healthy and at his best, he was throwing to like Roy Williams,
you know. And don't,
wait, what?
Don't forget Jason Witten his entire career. Like, that guy's
Jason Witten, yes. No question.
Tony Romo's had some weapons.
Most of the years,
by the way, an excellent offensive line that entire time, which is probably
that's
more
not
important
true.
Than all those things.
That's absolutely not true. You're talking about the last few years of the Cowboys, which for the most part has not been Tony Romo. He's been hurt. When Romo was healthy and really playing his best, he had a mediocre line, and he was throwing to guys like Roy Williams and Miles Austin.
Miles Austin was pretty productive for a couple years back there.
Because of Tony Romo, not because of Miles Austin.
All right. I'm not, you know, we can get into the nerdery here. I'm gonna try not to do that.
No, that's fair. And I think but I think this is my point about Tony Romo, is like, had he had this offensive line and Dez Bryant his whole career, I think we could very easily be talking about a Super Bowl winner and Hall of Famer.
I guess
that's
the
level that
I think there are a lot of guys.
I
think there are a lot of guys that you could.
I don't think there are.
I think there are a lot of guys that you could have an argument about through Tony Romo's. Donovan McNabb. You know what I mean? We can sit and have an argument. Is Tony Romo better than Donovan McNabb? We might come up with Romo. We might come up with McNabb. But there's
a ton of those guys.
Cam Newton. You know what I mean? Like, there's lots of these. There's just lots of those guys. And
we've had an era of really good quarterbacks, but to compare a guy to Donovan McNabb and Cam Newton is like, those are two guys that.
And by the way, Matt Ryan did not has played about half of his career without Julio Jones. I buy that. So it's, you know, I think people tend to overrate Julio and his success, not as great as Julio is.
I'm not trying to diss Matt Ryan.
I think we're burying the lead in this Tony Romo discussion, and they have the same number of Pro Bowl seasons, by the way. Not that that's a be all end all, because Pro Bowl is a little bit weird, but you know, just, if you're just sketching it out.
Matt Ryan's career may very well go down as better than Tony Romo's. That being said, if you give me a quarterback to win a football game today, I probably want peak Romo over peak Matt Ryan at this point.
Yeah, see, that to me, that's not even close to me.
Well, to be fair, you're a Falcons fan.
I am a little bit biased. But I've also watched a crap ton of Matt Ryan. So,
how much Tony Romo have you watched?
Yeah, because the Cowboys are never on TV. I never watched Tony Romo. all right, fair enough. Look, you know, that,
and
we,
again,
didn't, we didn't get
Matt
a Russell
Ryan,
Wilson. We didn't get it. Like, there's just a lot of guys.
Well, but that's really the next generation. And if Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson and Cam Newton and Donovan McNabb are your peer group, you're pretty damn good.
Yeah, he's a good player. I'm like, that's where we started. But I'm just saying, there, he was a very good quarterback, but this league has seen some very good quarterbacks. All right. You know, Drew Brees. You don't take Drew Brees over Tony Romo?
Yeah, Drew Brees is part of the Manning and Brady class, I think.
Yeah, but they were certainly peers. He won.
Yeah, no, it's those three. Those three stand above the rest of their
and
peers,
Rodgers.
I think.
Right?
Yeah, Rodgers now as well, although he's probably I don't know exactly whether he's this generation or the next one. He's sort of a tweener. Because there's really this group of Wilson and Newton and Luck that's coming up now. Yeah. And then there's the older group of Manning and Brees and Brady. And Aaron Rodgers is kind of the greatness in between,
Straddles
I guess.
Straddles a little bit. Some. Yeah. All right. Anyway, we're bearing the lead here, which is Phil Simms is not going to be on our television anymore.
Woohoo!
And that is a win for everyone.
Yeah,
it's a win
it is.
For the Romo family.
I mean, that's obviously the biggest win.
Yeah. No, it's outstanding. Like, I don't know if Tony Romo's going to be great, and there are a lot of people who seem to be pretty upset about this, although Phil Simms went straight from the playing field to the number one spot in the booth, so I don't really get it.
Wait, people are upset?
Yeah, there are people who are upset, especially, like, people in broadcasting, because they're like, this guy has no experience, he's never called a game before, and you're putting him on the number one team.
And where do people think they get color guys from, like journalism school?
I think there are people who would, you know, they say, oh, start him on the number 4-5 team or the number 3 team, and then, you know, maybe move him up when he gets some reps.
As if
you don't know how he's
going to
be.
The number 1 team has anything to do with quality. Phil Simms has been the number 1 guy for how long now?
Right.
He's the worst color guy they have. The number 1 team is about notoriety and attracting attention.
Right, exactly.
And Tony Romo will do that.
I mean, John, you know, we agree that John Gruden knows a lot about football, but John Gruden is not necessarily going to tell you a lot about football.
He's not going up there
and slurping every team as the, you know, as ESPN's number one guy. I'm not even saying he shouldn't be their number one guy.
No, I mean, he's a lot of fun. I love that broadcast.
Yeah. Like, it is what it is.
That's the business.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Troy Aikman may have also gone straight from the field to the number one spot.
I don't know if he went straight to number one, but the point is, this is entertainment. It's not a meritocracy.
Right, exactly. It's a jockocracy is what it is. And,
damn right.
And I'm fine with that. All right, we should get going.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we need to assign for homework. So.
Oh, yeah?
We have very little time to do it.
Okay, hurry up. Get to work.
To do the actual homework, I'm saying. All right, so the new Louis C.K. special dropped on Netflix. I feel like that's a must.
I know.
Got to watch that.
Watch that.
New season of Fargo. I mean, we're going to watch that.
When does that start?
I'm pretty sure that starts this week. I'm gonna look that up. And then I want to go off the beaten path for one, because I'm hearing very good things about this show. It's a show on IFC called Brockmire.
Brockmire,
and it stars Hank Azaria
as
a sort of burned out baseball announcer who gets a shot at redemption. And it's
Brockmire sounds like a great name for a burned out baseball announcer.
Yeah, and I've just heard it's very good. I have not seen any of it. In fact, I believe it also premieres this week. Oh no, Fargo starts next week. All right, so we got a little time.
Okay, thank God.
Okay, sorry, I've been bombarded with trailers.
Hank Azaria show sounds like it's right up our alley.
And I do believe Better Call Saul is this Monday as well, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. I'm really still thinking of Monday as next week, if you don't mind. Speaking of which, and this is really a production business, people will know already before I say this whether it's true, but this episode may not publish until Thursday.
All right, fair enough. You know, AMC ran a marathon of like Gus Fring episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
and I can't be more fired up for Gus Fring.
Here he comes.
So, like,
I have a feeling with Gus Fring, there will also come many other Breaking Bad appearances. You know, I think this is the. I think we have reached the point in Better Call Saul where we begin to see the building blocks of Breaking Bad. And I was listening to an interview with Bob Odenkirk where he was saying how impressed he is with how things that have started to happen in the episodes they're shooting, where he'll be like, oh my God, that you know, brings this interesting light to this relationship from Breaking Bad that, like, they seems like they must have known all along.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to that process. I've really enjoyed Better Call Saul. I think it's actually kind of underrated.
I agree. So I don't think it necessarily gets the attention it deserves.
Yeah. So I can't wait to see where that goes. And you know, like Breaking Bad is a show that as it went on, it deepened, and I feel like we're going to continue to see that here. So
yeah, and there's already so much. I mean, we also, like, there's still the prospect of jumping past Breaking Bad at some point.
Yeah. Do you want to take on a record? I'll only give it to you if I listen to Kweku Collins. How's that? Is that fair?
Yeah, you better listen to Kweku Collins, and then you can assign me a record. What is it, though, so the people know?
I want to throw the new Father John Misty album that's coming
out. Oh. That came out a few weeks ago, yeah?
I don't believe that it is out yet. I could be wrong.
Oh, well, then maybe
he's coming out. I think it's coming out Friday, I want to say.
Did he release a single or two, perhaps?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, there's some music out there from it. So.
I feel like I've heard some new Father John Misty, but I have not sat down, obviously, with the whole thing, obviously. So, yeah, sounds good.
All right. And, I mean, that sounds like enough stuff, but I'm excited for a lot of the stuff that is coming up in these next couple weeks. It's going to be good times.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
we should say Legion ended. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, or is that, do we need to save that for some other time?
Oh yeah, that's so funny because it ends a week. It ended a week ago, but by the time we recorded,
it's the first time we talked about it.
Yeah, feels like forever ago. I really liked the show overall. I think the prospects for the future are interesting. And I'm on board. That would be my quickest version.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think it was – it didn't turn out to be maybe a compelling mystery or anything like that. It was one of the – it was a sort of thing that, like, it never ended up having a twist because it just kind of, like, you started to figure out what was going on as it went along. And so there never had that moment of like, aha, this is what's been happening all along.
Yeah. Although there was an episode where there was like a couple of these like huge exposition things that tied a lot of stuff together. Right.
Well, there were exposition things.
Like the chalkboard scene. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. Well, that's what I'm saying. There were exposition things that sort of drew the lines together. But I feel like by the time they got there, those were not twisty. Those were just like, connecting the dots that were already pretty well on the wall, if that makes sense?
Yeah, for some people.
Okay. Well, I guess if you had read or talked much about it.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I was there, but I know a lot of people that were sort of struggling to understand what was real and what wasn't. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true, but that's more specific. I mean, I think people pretty generally had an idea by the time you get to the chalkboard scene. Don't you think most people knew, like, all right, there's something in his brain that's messing with him, and it expresses itself as these couple of figures, and, like, he's going to have to deal with this.
I think some people did. And some people, you know, people who were versed in X-Men lore knew the specific identity of this person, apparently.
Right.
You know, so there's lots of layers. But
I may be projecting a little bit there, but even if you didn't know that, it laid out pretty well. But it was the sort of thing where at the beginning you had no idea what was going on, and over time you gradually figured it out to the point where at the end I think there's a little bit of up in the air about where we're headed, but you, like, you're on solid footing.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's a very good show. It's visually so impressive.
Stunning. Yeah.
Although a little claustrophobic, I felt like they had like four sets. I understand they're moving the show to LA next year, which may open up some possibilities in terms of.
Well, also, you know, hopefully they're moving it out of his brain space a little bit because so much of the show existed inside someone's brain.
It does. It also does seem like it's headed that way.
Yeah.
And you know, it had a bit of the Mr. Robot unreliable narrator. You know. I think it handled it better than that show does, but
agree.
But you know, it did have some stuff, and I don't think, like, I feel like Fargo has been such perfect storytelling in terms of pacing and building a story to a crescendo and finishing in these kind of neat little satisfying bursts. This wasn't quite that, but it's definitely an excellent show, one of the better ones of the year, and I'll be excited for season two.
Well, I think part of that is Fargo benefits in that respect from being an anthology, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to put a bow on something that's over.
Right.
And Legion, like, is not only not over, but has, like, a world of possibility ahead of it. So yeah. It's...
But this is a show that is that calls each episode a chapter. So it's like, you know, there are opportunities to, you know,
end ostensibly, there should be an ending to a chapter, I guess. Yeah,
so... all right, on that note, we really should get the hell out of here.
Yeah, this is long. Nice long podcast there, Derek.
Every time we do our production and decide that we don't have anything to talk about, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a short podcast, and those are always the ones that end up an hour and a half.
That's probably true. Also, that may say something about the importance of planning. I got to get back to working on my deck here, buddy. I'm doing home improvement today before I go to work. So
I have to get back to my actual job that I'm supposed to be at right now.
Well, I have a job to do later. It's just I'm choosing to be more productive than you today.
Congratulations.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.